This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
Zonka didn't win the faceoff. Larkin did. And Detroit wins. They need better goaltending. They got it tonight from Cam Talbot, who had lost his last six decisions.
A clutch win for the Red Wings, a clutch loss for your Boston Bruins. 2-1 Saturday night in Detroit. Bridget, I'm excited about the Boston Bruins. You know why?
Yeah, I do.
They are getting really close to a top five pick in the NHL draft.
Yes, they are. And Casey Mittelstadt at the end of the game there almost tied it, and it went right into the glove, and I'm just thinking, all right, there we go, better draft pick.
Professional tanking, shooting right into the glove on a grade A scoring chance with 9 seconds left.
He was so mad. He was so mad at himself. But, and I'm sure, like, if this was a game that really mattered for Boston, then, yeah, everybody would be sitting around talking about how that needed to go in. But instead, we're going to spend time talking about how we're okay with the fact that it's going as badly as it is, because a top five pick could make a big difference in your turnaround, in your rebuild.
Yeah, it absolutely could. And, you know, look, obviously Bruins players and coaches don't care about that. They are very frustrated. We're gonna hear from David Pastrnak at some point today. On Wednesday, he said it felt like they need to start building because they don't have anything right now. Like, that's a really frustrating feeling for a player. But for fans, for media, yeah, this is more exciting than that kind of no man's land where you miss the playoffs and you get like the 11th or 12th overall pick, which would still be better than the Bruins have had in over a decade. But a little more hit or miss once you get down, you know, just outside the top 10. You get in the top five, there are potential real difference makers on the board, and for the Bruins specifically, at the center position. I don't know if we need to dive into the names just yet right off the top, but one of them is going to be playing for Boston College tonight in the Manchester Regional Final in the NCAA tournament. That's James Hagans, freshman center, who coming into the season was
supposed to be number one.
Yeah, it was widely, maybe not quite universal, but was widely considered the number one overall pick, or at least the guy who had the inside track, and has slipped a little, not because he's had a bad year or anything, but basically just because he hasn't had a Macklin Celebrini year. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, Macklin Celebrini did stuff that very few 17, 18-year-old freshmen have done in college. James Hagans is having a really good season, but not quite that. So a couple guys have probably moved ahead of him. That means he could potentially be there in the Bruins' range.
Which, in the beginning of the year, we're talking a few months ago, or the beginning of the season, I should say, and I was facetiously saying to Brian on our podcast that, oh, tank for Hagans, like, just jokingly. And the fact that they might actually be in the range where they could take him is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and there's other players. Like, there's kind of a tier from 3 through 6, I think, in the NHL draft that's shaping up. And three of them are centers. Hagans is one. Anton Frundell, kid out of Sweden, and Caleb Desnoyer, who's playing for Moncton in the Quebec Major Junior League. They've been the best team in that league. He's in the playoffs right now. So, yeah, that's like potentially franchise-changing stuff. Obviously, those guys still have to develop and pan out, but that is actually something I find myself getting excited about, because even a couple weeks ago, that didn't really seem to be in play. And now here they are. We wake up Sunday morning. The Bruins right now are tied for the 7th worst record in the NHL. They've lost 8 in a row, 0-7-1 in those 8 games. The offensive futility continues. They've now gone 10 games in a row with 25 or fewer shots on goal, which was already a franchise record. They've continued to extend that. Since the NHL started recording shots in 1959-60, only 10 other teams have ever had a streak like this. 10 straight games, 25 or fewer. And the last one was the Edmonton Oilers in 2006. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Bruins.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah, making the wrong kind of history, but this is why you have to think, like, this team can absolutely continue to lose a lot of their games down the stretch here.
Well, and someone texted me the other day and said, do you think they should tank, or do you think that they should try to get in? And I texted them back, like, I don't think they really have a choice. I don't think that they have the team put together right now that can win. And at the time, there was 10 games left. I think they maybe win three of the last 10. And that's even maybe a little high.
Yeah. I mean, you got the Washington Capitals coming in on Tuesday. That team has the best record in the conference. Then you go to Montreal, which we're going to be making that trip. Montreal fighting for a playoff spot. Like, it was funny. Like, start of the season, even December 1st, remember the Centennial game where Bruins really took control, kind of dominated Montreal, played a great game, and it was like, oh yeah, there's still a clear gap between these two teams. Like, Bruins, playoff team, Montreal still trying to figure it out. Well, now here we are getting to April 1st, and it's like, oh no, actually the Canadians are fighting for a playoff spot, and the Bruins were talking about a top five pick. So yeah, like, there's no easy games for this Bruins team anyways. But there's a lot of losable games down the stretch against teams either in the playoffs or fighting for the playoffs.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate the teams that Bruins fans should be rooting for to win so that you can get a better draft pick.
Philadelphia Flyers, big win yesterday.
Flyers, who you're tied with. The Kraken and the Sabres are the ones you can realistically pass for a better pick. The others at the very bottom are not going to be you're not catching San Jose for first.
No, you're not getting San Jose. You're not getting Chicago. You're probably not catching Nashville.
But everything else,
you
could finish as high as four, really.
Absolutely. And then if you're fourth, I believe the way the lottery works is you're just under a 10% chance of getting the first overall pick. So, like, there we go. We can talk about ping pong balls. Like, you know. But yeah, like, you're tied with Pittsburgh right now. You've got head-to-head games with Pittsburgh and Buffalo down the stretch. Big. But we thought there weren't going to be big games down the stretch. Those are big games, Bridget. Head-to-head with Buffalo and Pittsburgh.
Very big. Including our game in Montreal that we're going to head up to. But they've been on a three-game losing streak.
They
need to pick it up right now.
Yeah, there's still no one who wants that last wild card spot, it seems. I mean, definitely the Bruins don't. And they're now, 6 or 7 points back at this point? But yeah, like, Ottawa has pulled away for the first wild card spot. And yeah, and then it's your Montreal, back. Columbus, Rangers, Islanders. Like, none of them want it. Every time it looks like one of them's ready to maybe get some separation, they fall apart and lose three in a row.
Well, Detroit not that long ago was in the wild card, and now they're four spots out.
Well, and after that win over the Bruins last night, it's like now they're getting close again. Like,
yeah, nobody wants that last. But the funniest thing that I saw yesterday was the advertisement by ABC and ESPN to get...
They're trying.
It said... like, Detroit versus Boston fighting for a wild card spot. And I was like, not really.
Technically, maybe.
It was just funny. I was like, is that really what's happening? Because I don't think so.
Yeah, at another point, they're like, can Boston make one last push? And it's like,
I hope not.
even if they had won, I don't know if that's really a push, but
no.
Yeah.
They did the same thing when, right after the deadline, I think they played the Penguins. They were like, here come the Bruins, looking to make a playoff push. They traded their captain, but...
yeah.
they traded everyone. Now let's see if they can make it. It's rough. I mean, they're still playing without their two top defensemen, plus you traded Brandon Carlo, so you're three of your top four defensemen, and Nikita Zadorov is now the leader of your defense. He played pretty well yesterday.
Yeah, and he was back after he missed Wednesday's game for family reasons. We'll get into some other stuff as it relates to Nikita Zadorov, because obviously we were on last week, and then it was after Sunday night's game in Los Angeles that you had the little brouhaha with Zadorov's comments post game or non-comment when asked about Jeremy Swayman trying to fight, and Zadorov had to walk that back. So you had that whole thing that we'll get into. You mentioned McAvoy. He joined the team at the end of this road trip and started skating. He met with the media for the first time. We're going to play some of that, get into some of that.
We've got some calls. We've got some calls on the board.
We'll definitely get to some calls. We have a break coming up here in a couple of minutes, so we'll probably wait till after the break. But
I also like this text, which I texted you guys the other day, something similar, and nobody responded to me. So
I finally
get a chance to talk about it, and it has to do with potential coaches for next season.
Yeah, that's definitely another topic we can put on the board. The Philadelphia Flyers fired John Tortorella, so he's out there. Anyone excited about that?
And
no.
Well, yeah, no, I don't know if that's the best fit. I saw Jim Tortorella on Friday. His brother, John Tortorella's brother, who works for UNH because they're hosting the Manchester Regional. So I walked by him and held my tongue not to say anything to him.
You didn't just ask him, hey, does your brother want the Bruins job?
Yeah, you don't know how much I wanted to say something to him about it, but I just kept walking. But yeah, no, it's another topic of conversation we can have, because there's also all of these other teams that are in the same situation as the Bruins, where Pittsburgh, you know, the Flyers already fired Tortorella, but could Pittsburgh be another team to fire Mike Sullivan? Could Peter Laviolette come free getting fired from the Rangers? Like, there's other coaches that are going to get axed by the end of the season or right after the season, and that's clearly what Boston was waiting for this whole time, with Montgomery being gone a long time ago, keeping Sacco as the interim. But I feel like it's pretty likely at this point that we see somebody else at the helm next season.
Yeah, Cam Neely talked to Kevin Paul DuPont in the Boston Globe. That was some point during this road trip. It might have been the Anaheim game. And did say, like, he gave Sacco and the coaching staff credit, you know, acknowledged it's been a tough situation for them, tough season. He said he liked how they've handled it. He, you know, said all the right things. He said Sacco will be under consideration when they go through this coaching search. But yeah, it feels like it's gonna have to be someone else. I mean, it's tough, right? Like, I like Joe Sacco personally. This was not a great situation to be dropped into.
No, the hand that he got was not very fair.
No, but like, isn't this a situation where more has to change, right? Like, you started it at the trade deadline. Big changes there in terms of players out. Now the offseason, I think that's when changes have to come to the coaching staff. Players in, obviously. An exciting draft pick to make. All that's on the table. Sunday Skate, give us a call or text us. 617-779-7937. Andrew Raycroft, by the way, is on college hockey duty down in Bristol, Connecticut, so that's why he's not just protesting silently because the Bruins have lost 8 in a row.
Yeah, he just doesn't want to talk about it.
Hopefully
he calls us at some point. I wanted to talk about a few goalie things and some college hockey and the Bruins too, but had some goalie questions for him this week. We got to get him. I think he's sleeping in or something.
Jeremy Swayman, yeah. I'd say mostly good Saturday, but one goal in particular that I think you'd like back. Just a shot off the rush that beat him low glove. Got a piece of it, but not enough. That feels like it's been happening. I went back. That's 3 straight games that he has been beat cleanly off the rush from outside the faceoff dot. Not really what you're looking for. But yeah, calls are on the board. Zach Coe has you trending, and then we'll be back with more Sunday Skate.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Mass Mutual. Red Sox fell to 1-2 on the season last night after losing to the Texas Rangers 4-3. Rookie Christian Campbell continued to swing a hot bat. He went 2-for-3 with a double and launched his first career Major League home run, which tied the game at 2. They'll look to salvage a split this afternoon when Richard Fitz takes the mound opposite former Cy Young winner Jacob deGrom. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. That starts at 1:35 with Joe Weil on the Mass Mutual pregame show. Then Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks will have the call of the game, first pitch at 2:35. Celtics beat the San Antonio Spurs last night, 121-111, the final. That extends their winning streak to 8. Jason Tatum led the way for the Seas with 29 points. They'll wrap up their road trip tomorrow night when they head to Memphis to take on the Grizzlies, tip-off at 8:30. Bruins fell to the Detroit Red Wings, 2-1 the final in Detroit. Morgan Geeky, the lone goal scorer for the Bees. With that loss, their losing streak is extended to 8 as they continue to tumble down the standings. Pair of NCAA tourneys continued yesterday. Over in the men's hockey tournament, BU beat Cornell in overtime to advance to the Frozen Four, while UMass fell to Western Michigan. Later this afternoon, the top-seeded Boston College Eagles will take on the University of Denver in a finals rematch from last year. You can hear that one over on WEEI 850 AM starting at 6:45. Then over on the basketball side, top-seeded Florida erased a 10-point second-half deficit to defeat Texas Tech, while another top seed, Duke, handled Alabama to win their region and advance to the Final Four. Elite Eight rolls on this afternoon when Houston takes on Tennessee. Then top overall seed Auburn faces Michigan State, again with a Final Four appearance on the line. Trending brought to you by MassMutual. Don't forget to tune into the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show today at 1:35. My name is Zach Ho, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Sunday Skate coming up after this.
A-U-D-A-C-Y. Type that into your app search, then download.
This is Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Well, you know, we have 9 games left, and then, you know, we have to leave it all out there, and it doesn't seem like being the case the last couple of games. We still need to build something in this group, you know, and be connected You know, it's obviously early after game, so you don't want a lot of emotional talk, but, you know, we're going to be better than that and start building something here, because right now we have nothing.
That was David Pastrnak after Wednesday's loss in Anaheim, talking about how it feels like the Bruins have nothing right now, which we can sit here and talk about, yeah, just lose, get a top five pick, like, that's better than being stuck in 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever pick. But, yeah, for the players, it's like they do want to try to build some positive momentum to close out the season. Like, going into the offseason with just absolutely nothing, you know, whether that's – like, listen, Pastrnak has his goals and points. You know, he's going to have that to rest on no matter what. Morgan Geeky has a career year. Like, there's a couple guys. You know, Nikita Zadorov's been better in the second half than he was in the first half. But other guys, like, all these guys trying to prove that there's a spot for them or that they deserve to be here next year, a lot of them aren't really proving it, not really taking advantage of this opportunity or making themselves especially noticeable. Jeremy Swayman has not turned his season around yet. He is very much still struggling. So, yeah, as a group and even just as individuals, like, a lot of guys not really putting all that much good on tape right now.
Oh, we talked about Fabian Lysell needing to do something with his call-up and trying to convince people that he should have a spot on this team next year, and I don't know if you've thought that he's done that at all, but he hasn't.
In flashes, like, he's taken some shots. He's shown more of a willingness to shoot than his first game up where he didn't have a single shot attempt. That was back at the end of December. So that's mildly encouraging. I think he's made a couple plays in transition, but he hasn't really had great scoring chances. He hasn't really gone to inside ice very much. Look, no one's creating anything offensively, but it's like that's where you need someone for him to stand out. And it's like if he could even create, I don't know, 2 chances a game, it's like that's 2 more than just about everyone else in the lineup. And I don't think he's done that the last couple games. You know, Murat Husnadinov had an exciting start here when he came over after the trade deadline. You know, Kuzdi gang started getting together.
Brian started the fan club.
Yeah, I he's gone pretty quiet. Like, don't really see him creating a lot of chances these last few. So, yeah, you know, those are the guys you look at where it's like, okay, you're down to 8 games left now. Like, are you going to do something to show that you should be sticking around, to show that you should be part of the team next year? Or are you just going to kind of go quietly and, what, like, bank on a great training camp? Is that the plan?
Yeah, it's tough for Lysell. I mean, he doesn't have a single point yet. So, I mean, the team hasn't been scoring in general, but you'd think, you know, he's now that he's 5 games in, or six games total in, but 5 games, oh no, 5 games in to his NHL career, he's supposed to be a producer for you. And obviously, even if he was having these, like, great performances where he was getting really great high danger chances, you still at the end of the day look at the score sheet and he's not on it. So that definitely hurts, and it's something he has to work on the rest of the way, because we think he'll be up for probably a good chunk of these last few games. We see Kastelic is not around anymore, so that spot is open.
Yeah, you would think so. I'm sure eventually he'll get sent back down for the AHL playoffs, which I think will be pretty important for him. But, he could get at least a few more games here. He had the road trip, so we'll see how many more he gets. Let's go to the phones here. Let's start with Sorja in Mansfield. Zach, I might need you to punch it up. What's up, Sorja?
Hey, what's going on today, guys? Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you as well.
Really quick here, I kind of look at these like really big macro, and you look at every Boston sports team, right? Every team has some sort of direction, and it just seems like the Bruins team are the only team in the city right now without any direction. Like you guys mentioned, they're right now in the worst spot in sports, which is purgatory, right? And the other thing is that, they always talk about tanking in sports. Right now the Bruins are just playing so horribly, and that's why they keep losing. And, I think what was really telling when Don Sweeney talked about the rebuild versus retool, I think that it has to be a retool, because if you do the retool, you're going to end up in the same position this time next year.
Thanks, Sorja.
Thank you, Sorja.
So this is why I'm legitimately excited about the possibility of a top 5 pick. Like, that does accelerate the process. Obviously, you have to hit on it, and it's not going to be immediate. That, whoever you take 4th or 5th overall probably isn't playing next year, but they could be 2 years out. That doesn't mean they're going to be a number one center in 2 years, but you could be 2 years from seeing that player in the NHL. Like, that is a bit of a shortcut. Like, if you're picking around 10, yeah, that picks, a little further out. That's not as immediate of a fix. There's less of a chance of that player developing into a true number one center or top of the lineup player. Top 5, you've got a shot at that kind of player. Yeah. And like that's what this team's missing the most.
Yeah, and I was having this conversation the other day with some of my colleagues on the college hockey side of things about how James Hagans like could potentially. He could just be one and done at BC, depending on if like a team needs him, depending on where he gets drafted. And a lot of those guys, like last year, Will Smith was a top 5 overall pick, and he only played one season with BC. He left after his freshman year. Could James Hagans be someone that does that as well? Or maybe he stays 2 years at BC. And so he's a guy that you could see becoming a pro in the near future. Right, it's not going to take him that long to go from BC to this next level. And guys don't stay in college hockey for 4 years that are drafted that high.
Yeah, I think it would be smart for Hagans to stay a second year. And whoever drafts him, if it's the Bruins, don't give in to the temptation of wanting to bring him in right away just to excite the fans, or just because you have the hole in your lineup. Like, I think it would be a good thing for James Hagans to play a second year at BC. You still see him, even at this point in the NCAA, like, he gets huge winning goal in the first round of the NCAA tournament against Bentley. Nice, picks it up off the end boards, beats the goalie to the far post, wrap around with, you know, a minute, just over a minute left to send BC through to the second round. But you also still saw some plays where you can see him.
He's small.
Still trying to kind of figure things out. He has a habit of overpassing at times. He passes out of some good looks, which you'd like to see him just.
That whole line does. For as good of a line that is with Leonard, Perreault, and Hagans, like, Perreault overpasses too sometimes.
Definitely. Perreault passed out of, like, a grade A chance in the slot for a drop pass into traffic. And he should know better. Like, he is in his second year there. So there's stuff for James Hagans to work on. Yeah, you mentioned, like, he is a little on the smaller size, 5'10", 5'11". So physically, there's also development that can happen.
And yeah, he needs to put some weight on for sure. And he's only 18 years old, so there's part of college development is getting stronger and getting bigger, putting weight on.
But what you really like, and if you watch BC Denver tonight up in Manchester, 7 o'clock on ESPN2, I think that game's on. I know you can also hear it on AM 850 on WEI on the radio. But he's a great skater. He's really dynamic with the puck on his stick. He makes plays at high speed. He's very good playmaker. And I think while he can get stronger, he will mix it up and get into battles probably more than he gets credit for. Like, you'll see him in the corners. You'll see him digging. You'll see him kind of not take crap when guys go out at him. So, I like a lot about James Hagans in this. There's kind of been this notion that, okay, because he's not going to go first overall anymore, that he's slipping, or that, like, it's like a disappointing year somehow. And I just don't really buy that. Like, again, if the standard is, are you Macklin Celebrini? Well, okay, then I guess it's disappointing. But, like, great. Macklin Celebrini's having an awesome rookie season as an 18-year-old in the NHL. Like, that can't be the expectation for everyone. So, yeah, set your sights a little lower than that. But
it's interesting because the draft, like, there's a bunch of different ranking systems and different people who, you know, put out their rankings for what they think a guy's going to go. And he was, by a lot of those websites, put number one at the beginning of the season. Right now, what it looks like is anywhere between 2 and 6 is kind of where different sites have him ranked. So, I mean, that gives them, the Bruins, a legitimate chance at potentially getting James Hagans if they somehow get up into that top 5 and maybe get a lucky bounce of a ping pong ball at some point, if you can even call it a bounce. Or what do you even call that?
I think they bounce.
Okay.
Don't they? Or... I don't know. They kind of, like, float around.
We'll call it a bounce because we don't have a better word. But yeah, you could get a little bit lucky, move up a little higher because it's not a reverse order draft. It's a lottery. So could happen.
Yeah. Realistically, like, he's probably third at best, because I think Matthew Schaefer, a defenseman, is generally considered first overall pick. And then right behind him is Michael Mesa, who has kind of separated among the group of forwards, who's also a center, who would really be a prize for the Bruins. But again, you would have to get the bounces to get into the top two. Let's go to Maria from Watertown here. Good morning, Maria.
Hey, good morning, Scott. Good morning, Bridget. How do you think David Pastrnak feels about watching Brad Marchand set up the game-winning goal in a Florida Panthers jersey on Friday night? Probably like the rest of us felt watching that, which leads me to my question
game-winning assist to Sam Bennett, by the way, is the one he set up. So just to add it even more.
Yeah, to stick the knife even a little bit deeper into our backs. And, you know, Jim Montgomery referred and used the word at the start of the season, malaise. And unfortunately, that malaise seems to have carried forward throughout the entirety of the season and is now permeating its way into our front office. And I wanted to ask you about Cam Neely's comments when he sat down with the Kevin Paul DuPont, because it seems to me that he's either talking out of both sides of his mouth or he thinks that we as seasoned Bruins fans are you know, not paying attention. How can you say, you initially used the word retool, okay? That's what he said. Then you go out and do what you did at the trade line, and I was fine with it until you get to the Marchand trade, which you get nothing in return for nothing of significance and value right now to help your team. And you're giving us a rebuild look, but now you're saying everything is on the table? Which is it? What is going on here? If everything is on the table, that to me means you're rebuilding. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy, Maria. Thanks for the call. So the way I kind of took Neely's comments is I almost felt like he didn't – I feel like he didn't want to box himself into anything, which is why you get anything is on the table. Like, I don't think he wanted to say, yeah, we're going to be back next season, because now you put the pressure on yourself and Don Sweeney to have – really, like, a perfect summer is what it would take for this team to be back next season, and you don't generally have a perfect summer in any sport. You know, plan A's don't always happen. Like, there's a reason you have to have plan B, C, D, and E. Ask the Patriots how far down their wide receiver list they had to go this offseason, because everyone else either got traded elsewhere or re-signed or, you know, just wasn't available to them, or didn't want to come here.
Are you saying Steph Diggs wasn't their first choice?
He was not. I do like that signing, though. I think I think Steph Diggs could be pretty good here.
Yeah, this is our audition for keeping a show on Sunday. We'll just talk about Steph Diggs.
Yeah, and we can do football.
We can do football. We're very versatile.
I'm very excited about Christian Campbell. We can do that. Willie Abreu tearing up. I miss picking him up in my fantasy baseball league. I already regret that. On Neely's comments and the Bruins, like, so he doesn't want to say that because he doesn't want to box them into needing to turn it around in one off season. And he also doesn't want to, if it is going to be a longer term thing, he doesn't want to say that either, because they don't think this fan base will go along with it. Now, I know some fans will. We hear from them. People say, I would be patient. I would be okay with going down for a few years and getting multiple, you know, top 10 picks and, you know, come back in 3, 4, 5 years if it takes that. But those are the diehard fans who aren't going anywhere no matter what. Those are the ones who were showing up to a half-empty building and 2006, like high senior in high school, me was, but that is not the majority of the fan base. That is not the casuals. That is not the people who keep the Garden sold out every game, and they have to account for that portion of the fan base. And they don't want to tell them, like, yeah, check back in 3 or 4 years. No, like, they want people to have hope for next year, because it's really bleak right now. We see it. We're watching these games. They're not good. They're extremely unentertaining. It's a lot of bad hockey. Like, you'll lose people. People are already tuning out on this season. If you start next year similarly, you're going to lose more people.
Yeah, we've already seen it, and we've heard from, you know, our own circles of friends and, or, you know, fans that we know, and people have, people that listen to this show haven't, thank you guys, and people that support the podcast also, like, those are the diehard fans that we're hearing from. But certainly when you don't have guys wearing the jerseys that, you know, like, we still see a bunch of Marchand jerseys that he's not there, so he's somebody that was bringing people into the building. There were Carlo fans. There were Coyle fans. Those were guys that were bringing people into the building.
How about
those
Brandon
guys
Carlo
there?
getting into his first fight in 2 years?
Yeah, he's not a fighter, that guy.
No, but that was a decent tilt. He actually did pretty well in that fight last night.
Yeah, he. I felt bad for him because I just know that it's not like his game at all. But he thought he had to do it, and he did hold his own. But
And then that they were laughing about it in the penalty box. They were like staring at each other and just laughing.
What just happened?
Yeah, it was like a friendly laugh. It wasn't like the mean, like, I'm laughing to mock you type thing. It was like, hey, that's pretty fun, right?
Yeah, what did we just do here? Yeah, he's not that kind of guy, but he was a guy that people liked. He's a likable guy. There were a lot of Trent Frederick fans too. We used to see a good amount of Frederick jerseys in the stands, and now we basically, of the active players, just see Swayman because McAvoy's still hurt. So if you're a McAvoy fan, you're coming and you're not going to get to see him. We're not sure if he's coming back at all this season, just based on at the moment where his progress is, because he said he's not taking contact still. He's wearing the red non-contact jersey. Even though he's joined the team, he still doesn't seem to be very close to coming back.
Yeah, I think McAvoy is a good place to start next segment. We do have to catch a break here. Give us a call or text us, 617-779-7937. We'll be back with more Sunday Skate after this.
This is Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
Yeah, I mean, look, that'll be something, that myself and Pasta and the remaining leaders here will have discussions about. And to be honest, I haven't crossed paths with anybody since I've been hurt. These guys are in the thick of it. They're in the battle, and I'm just trying to get myself healthy. So it's tough to not be in the fight. It's tough to lead from the sidelines when you're not within the group and you're not, there. But
welcome back to Sunday Skate. That was Charlie McAvoy talking to reporters on the road this week after getting back on the ice with his teammates for the first time since suffering that shoulder injury and then a scary infection at Four Nations back in February.
Wouldn't really comment on the treatment that he got with Team USA.
Yeah, he stayed away from that. Yep. He basically said you'd have to ask the Bruins, like, if they, because he was asked, about the reports that the Bruins were unhappy with the treatment he got, which seemed pretty obvious from the statements they put out, but
those statements were overly detailed.
Yeah, they were like middle school, like passive aggressive notes or kind of stuff. Yeah, that was fairly obvious, but yeah, McAvoy wasn't going to comment on it.
But the fact that he doesn't tells you what you need to know. Like, if they did a good job, he just would have been like just covered for them. He would have wanted to give them credit for doing a good job, where he had the avenue to do it, and he didn't. So
right, like, he went out of his way to thank everyone at Mass General who treated the infection and stopped the spread, which he said in there, like, he said it was scary, and it was like scary for his family. He said it spread really fast, which just it's not really an irrational fear. I know Greg Hillshaw likes to talk about irrational fears, but infections scare me. Like, the idea of potentially having an infection is like, because you just don't, there's not really much you can do about it. You just have to get treated in time. No. And
I told you, I don't think I mentioned it on the show. My dad had the exact same thing happen to him this year in October. And for a very long time, couldn't figure out what was wrong. And it took an infectious disease doctor to go do, an exploratory surgery in his shoulder to find out what it was and how to treat it. And yeah, he was having all sorts of weird symptoms, crazy, fever, and, blood sugar was all out of whack. And it is scary especially when you don't know what it is.
Yeah. So Matt, what you heard there too is McAvoy talking about him and Pasternak now stepping up as leaders of this. And we hear from Pasternak at the beginning of our previous segment saying, it feels like they don't have anything to build off right now. And that very much feels like a process that, quite frankly, like, hasn't even really started yet. Because as McAvoy said, like, he hasn't been around. He's just been trying to get healthy. The team's been on the road a lot since the trade deadline. He wasn't with them. He was always back in Brighton getting his treatment there. And it's just hard. Like, it's hard to lead when you're not there.
Well, yeah, the fact that he said, I haven't crossed paths with anyone, tells you how it's not just that he hasn't been practicing, it's that he just hasn't been in contact really with guys since, you know, having to go through that situation with his treatments and not being able to be with the team really in any capacity until this past few days.
Yeah, so those two especially, it's like they might just have to get to the end of the season and then they get together and they figure out what they want to do and like what they want the Bruins to look like moving forward. Because obviously what Don Sweeney and the front office do is more important. Like McAvoy and Pastrnak can only do so much if the team around them is just really bad. So the front office has to start building a better team around them, have to bring in more support. They're going to need secondary leadership. So like, I know, you know, we're thinking about like the Bruins getting younger and kind of this next wave. And see, we've got some texts about the future that I want to get to, certainly top of next hour. But front office is also going to have to bring in some veterans who can like help support McAvoy and Pastrnak leadership wise. And then those guys have to figure out what they want to build in terms of just the room, the culture, the day-to-day, because I don't think it's going to be enough to just be like, well, we learned from Chara and Bergeron and Marchand, and we're just going to carry that forward. Like, this is more of a true kind of turning of the page, starting of something new, and they're going to need to put their own touch on this and lead their way and figure out how to lead together, because it is going to be, you know, more of like a Chara Bergeron 1-1A type situation, regardless of which one of them has a C, or maybe neither of them has a C. Like, maybe
are teams that opt to
Like maybe they just start next season with both of them wearing A's still. But yeah, like they're getting thrust into the spotlight now and into the thick of it, probably sooner than they anticipated. You know, I don't think they were expecting Brad Marchand to get traded or to leave after the season. They probably thought there were a couple more years where Marchand would be captain, they'd be his alternates. But now it's on them. Like it's their team, and it's tough because that Band-Aid gets ripped off at the trade deadline, and for McAvoy in particular, like he's not there and he's just not part of that immediate response of like, oh crap, what do we do now?
Yeah, and he has had to watch this 8-game losing streak unfold in front of his eyes, and he's had to watch a lot from the sidelines unfold, like the trade deadline, like not being able to help in that final stretch before the trade deadline where they were trying to convince Sweeney to be buyers rather than sellers, or just stand pat rather than the extreme sell where, you know, they're losing some of their best friends.
Yeah, there was another part where McAvoy said like, I wish a lot of things had gone differently down the stretch here. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure that's personally, and that's as a team, because right, that there was like a little bit of a dream there where, okay, McAvoy had come back from a previous injury. He had scored in back-to-back games. There were back-to-back Bruins wins. He goes to Four Nations. He plays great the first two games, and you're starting to think, okay, like maybe if you get this McAvoy the rest of the way, and maybe
Lindholm
Marchand
hadn't been ruled out for the rest of the season yet at that point either. So there was kind of like a, hey, maybe they get their top D pair back and they can do something.
Yeah, and like maybe Marchand's energized by Four Nations, and then it just all falls apart. McAvoy gets hurt. Hampus Lindholm gets ruled out for the rest of the year. Marchand gets hurt and then eventually traded. And yeah, that clearly sealed their fate. Like, I don't think they were really going anywhere special this season anyways. I think that was already getting decided. But that killed any last little hope that they could have possibly clung on to. So we got to catch another break here. But hour two of Sunday Skate coming up. Call or text 617-779-7937. We'll be right back.